it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
The Athletic.
The race is on, and Adrian Newey's F1 future continues to be a focus of paddock gossip, with multiple teams making a pitch for his services. But where does his future lie? And how realistic is talk of Kimi Antonelli making an early F1 debut as the latest round of driver market rumours circulates? I'm Ed Straw, and joining us with all the answers are Mark Hughes and Glenn Freeman. Well, Glenn, welcome back again. Once again, you're back in another future episode of Bring Back V10s or Bring Back Hybrids or whatever, with this whole talk and the frenzy about Adrian Newey. So this is you very much doing your research for 2045 or whenever we get around to this.
Yeah, I had a few people last week saying they can't wait for this episode in 20 years' time. And I said to somebody that for the Race Members Club, we'll do a special series that is everything that happened off track in the first 4 to 5 months of 2024. And I said it'll be about 400 episodes.
Yeah, I think that's about right. It's certainly been fairly frenzied. And obviously, Mark, you were in Miami. So this was a huge talking point in the paddock, wasn't it? The whole Adrian Newey thing and the other network of interconnected things going on. So it's just been relentless frenzy, hasn't it, this year, of just storylines.
And yeah.
Anytime you think there might be a relatively normal race, there's some madness going on.
Yeah, and ever since Lewis Hamilton went to Ferrari, it's all been Red Bull related since then. And it's still unfurling, even as the season progresses. So yeah, we've got a bit to talk about.
Well, let's get on with it then, because inevitably, Newey's departure from Red Bull was the talking point in Miami. So what have we actually learned about his plans, both from what he said and the paddock gossip?
I did have a chat with Adrian in Miami, and he's not somebody who'll give you BS. He's someone that might not always be able to tell you everything, but he won't feed you a misleading steer. And I genuinely believe that he has not decided what he wants to do yet, and he's decided he won't decide for quite some time yet. So I think we know how hard Freddy Vasseur is pushing to get him at Ferrari, very hard indeed. I think the stories of them meeting up are true, and I'm sure he's entertained offers from elsewhere, and I'm sure he's quite open-minded when he listens to those. But as for his immediate plans, no, he has nothing. I don't believe he has anything in place. I don't believe he wants anything in place for now. I do believe he wants to have a nice break, which may last a few months, may last a year, who knows. But he's got himself contractually free of Red Bull about a year from now, and he hasn't done that for no reason. So I would imagine he will be thinking, yes, I'll probably do something more, but I'm not quite sure what it is yet, and I don't think we will know for quite some time yet.
Such a great position to be in, not having to pressure yourself back in, have a few months off, think about what you want to do, and you've got absolutely everyone desperately trying to get your signature. So I guess, Glenn, that's a luxury position for him. Do you think that we'll definitely see him back? Do you think this is still one of those things that's up in the air? He might be feeling out what it's like to perhaps have a bit of time away from F1, and does he want to do other challenges? He's someone who want to do something, but it doesn't have to be F1, does it?
No, that's true, and he's talked about plenty of other things in the past. He's even, I think it might have even been to you, Mark, a year or two ago, where he talked about his sort of frustration. I've mentioned it on a previous podcast, his frustration at the way the electric vehicle industry is going on the road. And he thinks a lot more could be done there. So somebody that driven, that intelligent, and that who has that kind of open-minded thinking and thinking of things that other people haven't thought of, you can apply that to all sorts of other industries. He's not somebody who's totally blinkered on F1. There's lots of other things he's interested in. I suspect, although it's really interesting what Mark said there, that, you know, if Adrian was done, he wouldn't really care if Red Bull required a massive gardening leave or you know, a non-compete clause in F1 or anything like that. So that feels significant. And I also think the big significant thing here is obviously there is a rule change coming up. We know Adrian loves rule changes. He maybe finds modern rule changes more frustrating than they were 20, 30 years ago because they're so restrictive. But we also know that he thought these current rules that we had were going to be awful and almost pointless for someone as talented as him. And then when he really got stuck into them, he found areas of performance where he could make a difference. So I suspect it would be interesting to discuss this if, say, we knew we had rule stability for another 4 years and he'd maybe go, well, I've done these cars, maybe I'll go and do something else. But I think the timing of the changes for 2026 are ideal for him to be freed up when he is, even if, as Mark said, we're about a year away from him being free to work for someone else. So he would miss a crucial opening phase of development work at another team, because the real work on these cars can't begin until January the 1st, 2025, can it?
Yeah, there's the aero development ban and that kind of thing. You can do some conceptual work, and obviously the regulations, we're about a month and a bit away from having a finalised draft published set, first version of those, but people know roughly where they're going. But yeah, that is something that puts a bit of time pressure on it. But Mark, I think it's worth sifting through, because there's been so much talk about who's been speaking to Newey. We can assume pretty much everyone has at least had a bit of a go. James Vowles at Williams talked fairly openly about seeing if he can convince Newey to come back to his old team. But there's also been people reporting he's definitely thought no, not Mercedes, not Aston Martin. Do we know if he's ruled anything out at all, or is it just completely open to anything and just see how things play out?
I'm sure in his own mind he's probably ruled one or two of them out, but I don't think that's known to anyone other than him on the outside, you know. So I'd be very surprised if he went somewhere with the sort of very high-profile style of leadership that Aston Martin has. I don't think that would really be his cup of tea, but who knows? I don't think that, I mean, I can't see him going back to McLaren because it's somewhere he's been already, even though it was a very different McLaren then. I could sort of half see him fancying taking on a left field challenge, such as trying to bring Williams back to the fore. I know, yes, he's been there as well, before as well, of course, but I think there are downsides from the Ferrari thing from his perspective, I think, but it's probably got the strongest hand to play, I would imagine, if anyone is going to secure his services.
The giveaway for me, obviously Adrian hasn't spoken on the record very much, but he did an interview with Martin Brundle for Sky, didn't he? And I thought Martin did a great job of asking very short, very direct questions that just didn't give Adrian much to work with, didn't give him any ways of wriggling out of it. And the way he put him on the spot, where he basically said, Lewis Hamilton wants you at Ferrari, do you look good in red? And the nervous laughter, like, you know, if Adrian knew he giggling, basically. That said to me, obviously he's caught out by the line of questioning, but there was a bit of me going, that looks like a man who quite likes that idea and maybe doesn't want to give it away yet. And we know Ferrari have tried so many times to get him in the past, various regimes at Ferrari as well. And we also know that 10 years ago, it would have still been Luca de Montezemolo there, he was offered the keys to the kingdom. It was come and run our F1 team technical side, of course, but you can design as many of our road cars as you want and look after all of that side as well. It was a total Hail Mary offer. Here's everything. And he had his reasons for saying no. I think he's always previously been put off probably by the idea of having to relocate to Maranello, to Italy, and not really being up for that. There's obviously a question with the way an F1 team would use him now, how much of his time would be required there. And also, people's life situation changes. In the past, he's been unsure about uprooting his family, for example, and not wanting to move them to Italy. His family situation would be very different now. His family would have grown up. So there's lots of things that have been a reason not to go to Ferrari before that are probably different now, and I find that quite interesting.
Yeah, things change, don't they, in people's outlook. That's something that's often forgotten when people are talking about this kind of thing. What is fascinating, though, is we talked about how many people want him. I can't think, Mark, of any time when a non-driver has created such a feeding frenzy, almost, in terms of being on the open market. It tells you, if it needed emphasising, how unique a place in Formula One Adrian Newey occupies. It's phenomenal, really, to have this kind of scenario. I can't tie it to any other technical free agent in the past over seven odd decades, or down to the eighth decade of the World Championship. I just can't think of any analogue for this. It just shows how unique Newey is.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And he's, we've said it before, but he's from the generation that's grounded in not just aerodynamics, but the whole car. And he's unique anyway in terms of the depth of his skill and understanding and insight, but even more so given the uniqueness of his experience. And I think as the, you know, Formula One has become bigger and more economically powerful, so it's the market has gone a bit crazy. And he's seen as pure lap time. That's just something that you can plug in and you've got lap time.
I think it's also a reflection of the fact that there's so much sort of dark art to these current regulations that we have. And there are so many teams out there, even towards the front of the grid, who have either a nagging feeling, or in the case of someone like Mercedes, certainty that they haven't worked it out yet. So it's the fact that he's clearly played a part, however big that part is up to anyone to debate. He's played a big part in Red Bull mastering these regulations from the off. So that makes him probably as desirable as he's been for a very, very long time. You know, whereas if you compare it under the previous regulations, everybody would maybe have a swing at him, but there perhaps when Red Bull were maybe the third fastest team, when that would occasionally happen, there wouldn't perhaps be, I think the word is right that you used there, a frenzy. But it's kind of a reflection of where we are at the moment, where nobody's totally convinced that they're on top of these rules in the same way Red Bull are.
Yeah, it just shows what value there is in that knowledge and conceptual understanding and the many strands of the discipline of designing, running and optimising racing cars that all focuses on Newey. But it is interesting though, Mark, that Ferrari is probably the favourite, because you alluded to we've talked about the previous offers, but it also just confirms what a good move Ferrari did by getting Fred Vasseur in. Now, when he was signed, I was a little bit worried about the signing because I feared primarily he wouldn't be able to just do what he does, which is run a racing team. But Ferrari's top brass seem to be letting Fred Vasseur get on with running Ferrari as a race team, which sounds so obvious, but actually has never been a foregone conclusion in Ferrari. And I think it says an enormous amount that Ferrari isn't off the table and Newey isn't thinking, I'm not going into that madhouse. He's looking at it and thinking, actually, under Vasseur, this could be an organisation in F1, certainly, that I'd be willing to work for. And I don't think that would have happened, certainly not if Maurizio Verbene was the team principal, for example, still.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think there's a level of stability there that the senior management of whether they've seen the light or whether the Freddie has been instrumental in getting them to see the light, I don't know. But it's definitely a more healthily functioning organisation than it was. And like you, I had my doubts. I thought he would just be placed under the same compromises as the previous team principals, but it looks like he's managed to transcend those and, you know, impose his own way of doing things. And he's very able and competent team boss. So, and very charismatic as well. The people who like him really do like him. And that's been a big part in both Leclerc's faith in the team, you know, because I'm sure he had offers to go elsewhere before he renewed. And also in terms of Lewis joining, Lewis has even said he wouldn't have joined if Freddie hadn't been there. So, yeah, I think that's very much the fact that Newey's clearly not dismissing it this time is very much a lot of the credit that goes to Freddie.
Yeah, and it's got echoes of something, hasn't it? A Frenchman leading Ferrari, star driver signings, star technical signings, making the most out of Ferrari's potential. We've heard that one before, and it ends very, very well.
Ed here, interrupting the podcast to tell you about NordVPN. I'm very fortunate that my job takes me around the world, following the F1 circus as it circumnavigates the globe. But living a lifestyle like this also means I'm constantly logging on to new and unfamiliar public Wi-Fi networks at racetracks, in hotels, at airports, and so on. And trust me, doing that always carries a risk, unless you protect yourself. For many years now, I've used a VPN, NordVPN to be precise. It's the best way to keep me and my private data safe online, wherever I am in the world and whatever I'm doing. NordVPN's threat protection feature is the best I've come across, protecting me from viruses, malicious malware and phishing sites, which means things like my bank details and online passwords are kept safe and sound when I'm logging onto airport Wi-Fi, desperately trying to send my editor at the race an article before boarding a plane. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/the race. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. The link is in the podcast episode description.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Bad habits, we've all got them. Like reading the Daily Mail website. Like listening to love songs and thinking they're about you. Like smoking. Well, our sponsor Fume is an award-winning flavored air device that will help you kick the bad habit in an enjoyable way. Instead of vapor, Fume uses flavored air. Instead of electronics, Fume is completely natural. And instead of harmful chemicals, Fume uses delicious flavors like orange vanilla, crisp mint, and maple pepper. All very herbal tea-ish and all very refreshing. Fume continuously invests in third-party studies to ensure the safety of their products and is backed by doctors in the US. Want to give it a go? Fume has served over 300,000 customers and you can be their next success story. For a limited time, use the code RACE to get a free gift with your journey pack. Just head to tryfume.com and use the code RACE. That's tryfume.com/race, RACE. Fume, no nicotine, just delicious, natural flavored air.
Right, we're now going to move on to some Adrian Newey-related questions from the Race Members Club. If you're interested in joining the Race Members Club, click the link in the episode description. You can also head to our website and click on Go Ad-Free, because an ad-free environment on the website is one of the benefits of the Race Members Club. You also get to ask questions to this podcast. We always answer the questions after the race, but we have so many that we're going to spread through the next few episodes, a few of these questions, but we've got a set of Newey ones inevitably. So, Mark, we'll throw this one at you first from Jacobus VDL, who says, The announcement of Newey leaving Red Bull has been huge news this weekend. Across the other top five teams, who are their Newey equivalents, the key technical people that they rely on for their design leadership?
There aren't any. Every team has, in the aerodynamics and design department, very, very gifted, talented people who will have their own vision of how they think a car should be, and who are very, very good at interpreting the data. But in the lead positions that we talked about before, to have someone who has been involved in every single aspect of the creation of a car for so many decades and has such an intricate understanding of which are the sensitivities and when and how they change with regulation change and with development of cars, and which levers to pull and how much you pull them, I don't think there's anyone else in a senior position has that overview, nor that depth of insight. So if you say who are the equivalents of the other teams, I don't think there are any.
And there, in a nutshell, is the reason why everybody is bending over backwards to try and bring him in. Glenn, a question for you now from Richard Randall, who says, even with Adrian Newey's departure now confirmed, it still feels as if there's more disruption to come at Red Bull. With 2 teams under the firm's ownership, is there a chance that those on one side of the argument will go to one team, e.g. Red Bull Racing, and those on the other side move to the other, RB?
It's a great idea, Richard. I don't think that's what will happen. I imagine if there is further or deeper division in Red Bull, those people will be looking to get out entirely. And if you're at a team like Red Bull Racing, you're going to want to work for another front-running team if you want to stay in F1. I suppose the one thing that could happen is if there's someone who is asking for a way out and perhaps the Red Bull Technology Group really rates them, they could offer a promotion, so a much higher sort of rank if you go to the other team. So it might be, oh no, don't stay at this level in Red Bull, go over there and we'll make you much more senior than you are now, and maybe they'll have an eye on bringing that person back in the future. But I love the idea of a formal split where you get all of the workforce, they can all stand out in that Milton Keynes industrial estate, I guess, and go, right, everyone who's okay with what's going on here, you go that way, you're Red Bull Racing. Everyone who's got a problem with it, you go that way, you're RB. Great, great idea. I'd love to be there to witness it. I don't think it's going to happen. And I suppose this might be a good point to quickly talk about. We obviously finally heard from kind of the Red Bull group upper management, didn't we? We had Oliver Mintzlaff effectively giving, I think we can say, Christian Horner his backing. And however you choose to interpret that, I interpreted that as an attempt now by Red Bull to try and draw a line under this. We finally had the intervention from above publicly. So I suspect they're hoping that rather than Newey being the opening of floodgates and there's going to be a massive exodus now, I suspect they're hoping that kind of Newey sneaks out the gate and then they can close the gates and everything else will calm down and everyone else will stay.
It's interesting, the idea of a schism, because it's exactly the kind of thing, Mark, isn't it, that if this was 50 years ago, you could see something like that happen. You could see an ATS-style situation. I don't mean the 80s ATS team, but the 60s one, which was a Ferrari breakaway. And obviously, it doesn't really work like that now, but I quite like the idea of that kind of schism.
Yeah, it was termed a palace revolution, wasn't it? And, all the ones who'd plotted against Enzo were turfed out, and they thought, right, we'll show you, and they're set up on their own. And everybody remembers the ATS team of the early 60s.
All those championships they won.
Yeah. So, yeah, you've got to be careful. if you've got a career to think about and how it might go in these sort of situations. But I think there's enough momentum and enough talent and depth that you're not going to see a light switch effect at Red Bull in terms of its competitiveness. But if you're looking longer term, yeah, there are question marks, of course.
Yeah, these kind of schisms and the breakdown of teams, it happens on a very long, slow timeline. It's like turning a juggernaut around, isn't it? It's not these sudden things. They're too big for that. But you can build up that momentum towards it. So it's going to take time to really see the full impact of all that's been going on with Red Bull. That's why we need to bring back V10s in the mid-2040s to really reflect on that. The next question comes from Mark Martin, which we'll throw at you, Mark, seeing as you've got the same first name. How much truth is there to Zak Brown's statement that Red Bull CVs are arriving on the doormats of other teams?
Well, we cannot know exactly how many CVs are floating about from team to team. But when it was put to Christian Horner, he fired back immediately. He said, because Toto had also said that they were seeing Red Bull CVs. And he said, well, not only do we always see CVs from other teams, he said, but Toto might reflect on the fact that we took 230 people out of Brixworth for our Red Bull powertrains. So he said, that's a hell of a lot more than a few CVs. So, it's just tit for tat, really. I'm sure the number of CVs will have increased from Red Bull, but I don't think we're looking at a situation where everybody wants out. I'm sure it's just a little bit more than the residual.
I think we have to factor in with comments like that where they're coming from and the desire for mischief making as well. I think
exactly
for people like Zak and Toto who are on the receiving end. With Miami being the exception, obviously, quite often on the receiving end of an on-track beating from Red Bull most weeks, the idea of trying to stir the pot from slightly afar, it's certainly in their interest. So I'm amused by those comments, but I always take them with a pinch of salt.
Yeah, exactly. And it's worth remembering, there's so many people in these teams, there's always CVs flying around. And if you're somebody who's working at Red Bull, there's often the chance to get a promotion by moving to other teams. We see people doing that all the time. And there's all sorts of reasons why people might might be wanting to look around. I would imagine that at any given time, because if you look, there's always F1 team jobs being advertised because they're so big now that there's inevitably turnover. So I imagine pretty much every F1 team has CVs from every other F1 team personnel at any given time flooding in. There's a lot going on there. So yeah, it's a convenient thing to say, I think.
That reminds me, we were talking about Adrian Newey and Williams earlier. I saw Williams advertise a job somewhere, and it was something like design quality engineer. I was like, oh, Adrian Newey could do that. Design, quality, he's an engineer. Perfect.
That'd be fun, wouldn't it, if you're Adrian Newey, just start applying for relatively, by his standards, modest jobs, but very important jobs, and just see what
happens. Missed a deadline, Adrian. Sorry, you missed a deadline, you know.
we'll let you know the next time there's a vacancy on the shop floor.
Or they'll get him in and ask him something like, could you give us an example of a time you've worked well as a team to solve a problem? And he doesn't give a good answer, fails on interview technique. You can imagine something like that. There's plenty of comedy there. Anyway, next question for you, Glenn. Now, it's basically two questions in one about a potential direction for Adrian Newey. Jordan Stover asks, could Newey possibly work for Formula One itself alongside Pat Simmons for his next move? While Chuck Aoki says Newey always complains about F1 regulations-wise, so would he ever consider going to the FIA to help develop the regulations? I'd be fascinated to see what that might lead to. Well, two good questions there, both offering the tantalising question of could Newey go the poacher-turned-gamekeeper route?
Yeah, it's a fascinating line of questioning. I can't think of many F1 designers who I think would be less suited to that for various reasons. Firstly, I think the kick Adrian gets out of doing what he does is being given a set of someone else's regulations and then working out the best way to deal with them. I also think if you took Adrian Newey into that kind of role and said, right, what sort of F1 regulations would you draw up? His would be really open and brilliant and fascinating. And that's just not the way F1 works now. So once he would hate it, the moment he got in there and told, you can't do that, you can't do that, we need to constrain that, you can only let them do this here. And he'd go, well, what's the point? Like, I can't bring enough to this process. So as much as I would love to see what he would come up with for a set of F1 regulations, I don't think the way F1 works would allow him to kind of spread his wings on that front. And I can't see him as the sort of person who'd get a kick out of that. He wants to get stuck into the rules for himself. He doesn't want to hand them over to somebody else.
Yeah, you've got to remember how competitive he is as well. That's just not a competitive position, is it?
He's also, he's just way too much of an iconoclast to do it as well, isn't he? Just, he's not an institution man as such. He's a, you know, good hard racing. That's the kind of approach he takes. So, yeah, I just can't see it happening. It would be very, very interesting. But, yeah, for all the reasons that have been discussed and others, I think by disposition, by job spec, by everything, it's just a no, fascinating as it would be.
Someone should ask him what he would do while he's in this period. Someone, whether he's in South Africa or whatever, someone who can get to him should say, what would a set of rules drawn up by you look like? Just for fun, because I don't think you'd ever do it for a real job.
It's actually the kind of thing that if you're F1 or someone or the FIA, it might just be worth just saying, oh, you know, we'll bung you a few quid just to do your own little design study, just as a thinking point, because you never know. Even though I suspect his spec would be unrealistic for the commercial demands and the manufacturer demands and all this kind of thing, you never know. There might be a few things that could be taken out of it that could actually feed into the regulations. Wouldn't that be a fascinating thing? It's worth a phone call, isn't it? You never know. Mark, we've got a question that's not about Adrian Newey, but it's sort of in the technical personnel realm, and it fits in quite nicely here, and I think it's an interesting question. It comes from Ian Hanley, who says, this is more a bring back V8 question, but right, here goes. Well, we've got Glenn here, so that you're allowed to go a bit bring back V8 or even bring back V10s. I like Pat Simmons, brackets, I don't know him, but he seems like an upfront kind of guy and very knowledgeable, but we never heard fully what happened in Singapore 2008, yet the FIA put the blame on Briatore and Simmons and banned them. There must have been conclusive evidence, yet the details made to the public seem very vague where Simmons is concerned. What exactly was his role? And despite the lifetime ban being lifted, how the hell does someone accused and found guilty of cheating become F1 technical director? Isn't it a bit like Ben Johnson or Dwayne Chambers becoming head of athletics, or even the anti-doping organisation? A dramatic example, I know, but you know what I mean. From watching and absorbing all things F1 for the last 30 years, Pat comes across as a stand-up guy, which makes his involvement and the lack of transparency over his part in this all the more confusing. I would also like to know more details about the supposed sabotage of Ferrari's cars by Nigel Stepney. Interesting question there, Mark.
It is, and I'll have to be careful how I answer it. But yeah, in terms of the Renault Singapore episode, I have spoken to the relevant people and do know pretty much what happened, but I can't give you chapter and verse on who said what. But the basic background is that earlier in that season, Briatore informed his senior management that unless they won a race that year, Renault was out the following year. And so there was enormous pressure to come up with something. And the idea of what transpired was, it was a throwaway line by somebody related to one of the drivers concerned. Why don't you think about, you know, doing this and doing that? And Briatore immediately picked up on it, and it wasn't meant as a serious proposition, but Briatore took it very seriously and immediately asked of Pat, could that be done? And so they looked at a map of the circuit, which were the runoff areas that didn't have cranes and where you could block a track, et cetera, et cetera. And the answer was, yes, it could be done. And Briatore instructed that it should be done. And of course, as the person involved in making that happen, Pat was very, very much implicated in it, and much to his regret. And he's pretty much accepted the punishment that was dealt him, because he was banned for quite some time. And, you know, he accepts he was part of it, but it's entirely up to the individual how much of a justification that was, that threat of the team going out of existence. But that was the backdrop to it. On the Ferrari thing, yeah, as you say, we can't get Nigel Stepney's part anymore, but the broad story was that, yes, he'd been felt thwarted from his ambitions of becoming more senior in Ferrari. He had envisaged being a technical director level of guy, and Ferrari disagreed with that assessment. And so, yeah, that's when everything started, but we don't know exactly what truth there is in the rumours that he was actually positively sabotaging the cars.
It's actually worth saying on Stepney, he's not talked about a huge amount, but I referenced the Jeantot regime at Ferrari, but he was kind of the first step in that, bringing Stepney in. So he was a key player at Ferrari. I think on Pat Simmons, there's a reasonable amount of information out there about what he did, because the WMSC, when they had their trial, for want of a better word, they did publish a fairly comprehensive document in which you can see a number of things. Now, part of the question was how he managed to be rehabilitated and be working for F1. And one of the things that was always striking was Simmons actually conducted himself pretty well through the investigation. Now, obviously, orchestrating the crash and manipulating the race was not an acceptable thing to do by any stretch of the imagination. But he was very careful to avoid lying to people when he was being questioned. He would sometimes decline to answer questions. And in fact, I think at one stage he accepted he knew what people would infer from that. And he was offered immunity at some stage in exchange for cooperation, something they were really after Briatore. But he didn't take that. He had some dignity in the way he fronted up to it and the way he cooperated with the investigation, which I think brought him a little bit of credit. And he did. There's a quote in the WMSC verdict where he acknowledges his role in the incident. And he says, I was the one who, when the idea was first suggested to me by Nelson Piquet Jr., should have dismissed it immediately. It's to my eternal regret and shame I did not do so. And there is actually some dispute about who suggested the idea. I think Piquet Jr. suggested, Pat Simmons had suggested it. Simmons suggested Piquet Jr. had, and obviously, as you alluded to there, Mark, there were potentially others involved as well. So I think that played a part. And obviously, there was a lifetime ban for Briatore, for example, and a five-year ban for Simmons. Those were slightly... obviously, Briatore got that overthrown, and Simmons was able to rehabilitate through consultancy for the Marussia team. And then he worked for Williams as chief technical officer, and now at F1. Interestingly, Briatore's working for F1. He's got a sort of commercial promoter role now as well. Domenicali brought him in, so he's in there as well. It is funny how that happens, but I don't know about you, Glenn, but I do think that when people commit these, well, it's in motorsport terms, it's a crime, isn't it? And they get punished, they work their way back up. I like the principle of the fact you can serve your time and then still your skills and talents and abilities can be utilised in a constructive way. And I certainly think Pat Simmons comes at it in that way. You know, he's somebody I've got a lot of time and respect for. That's always a black mark on his reputation, no question about that. But he's somebody who has an enormous amount to offer. And I think it's good effort I've got him, actually.
Yeah, it did amuse me when he first got that role, because your instant thought is, whoa, one of the few people properly convicted, if you want to call it that, of cheating. But yeah, I mean, punishments like these are, you're supposed to believe in them being a part of rehabilitation, and they're not necessarily being a massive sort of legacy hangover once that punishment has been served. And I think that's acceptable depending on the person's attitude. So obviously if Simmons had gone about handling this in a different way once it all came to light, or if he'd shown little remorse for what he did, then it would be you could ask more questions about F1 bringing him in. So you could say, well, this, you know, in that situation, you'd be saying, here's someone who I think you can question the morals of if they don't necessarily see the error of their ways previously. But as you've laid out there, Ed, the way he spoke about it, the regret he has expressed, if he's got talent and ability and intelligence and all those things that his career in F1 shows, the rest of his career in F1 shows he clearly has, then he has been a very valuable asset to F1. So I think they did the right thing bringing him in. But I can totally understand why we got this question. And I think the stuff that you and Mark have laid out has perhaps helped explain why it is more okay for him to come in than it might have looked on the surface.
Yeah, it definitely looks odd from the outside. Let's put it that way. But yeah, it's just one of the many remarkable knock-on effects of the whole Singapore thing. You'd never have seen when this was all happening. The idea of those two being anywhere near F1 again at the time, when this all came out in 2009, just wasn't there. But yeah, that these, you know, quality people who have something to offer, which Simmons is certainly one of, you're always going to try and make the most of them. And he's a really intelligent, thoughtful, insightful, technical mind. And I think he has a lot to offer. And in fact, he's someone who's offered a huge amount to F1 over the decades. And yes, Singapore is part of what he's done. That shouldn't be overlooked. But it's not the only thing he's done. He's brought, I think he's a net positive, despite that huge, huge net negative. That huge negative.
We obviously had the athletics and doping comparison in the question. I would say it's not quite Lance Armstrong coming back to run the Tour de France, is it?
Or Lance Armstrong, boss of WADA.
Yeah,
it's slightly different, and yeah, it's a valid analogy, but yeah, all these circumstances are slightly different. I think actually a lot of sports have characters who've had some kind of black mark on their reputation, still do find themselves into these institutional roles later on. You know, it's all part of life. Nobody gets everything right all the time, so. In many ways, it's a positive that there is a way back for people who have something to offer. Right, Mark, the one dimension of Newey's departure we haven't addressed are the persistent rumours about the possibility of Max Verstappen leaving. Any sign in Miami that there's something in that, or is it still as it was?
Oh, it's still very much a live topic. And as far as we can ascertain, there does seem to be some divergence even within the Verstappen camp about what the future plans may be. But I do believe that Max has got the ultimate say, and I do believe Max when he says he intends to be there next year. So it's, I think, a question more of where he's going to be in 2026. But certainly there are parts of his team who would ideally like to get him out of there at the end of this season, but I don't believe that will happen. I think if he goes, it will be for 26.
And 26 would be, if you did want to leave, the logical time, because it seems very unlikely that the 25 Red Bull won't be a championship caliber car. So you'd just be giving things away to do it. So I guess, Glenn, if you're Max, that's the logical play, isn't it? If you've got questions about Red Bull, about the engine for 26, etc., why give away a world championship to put yourself somewhere where you have a year? You might as well take a year out almost if you're going to do that.
Yeah, that's the strange thing, isn't it? Because it's kind of it's sad from a competitive point of view that we basically think Max is already the 2025 world champion. But if you're Max, why would you give that up? And not only are you taking away perhaps your own chance to be world champion, but you're handing a championship winning car to whoever fills the seat as well. And that's not really what competitive sports people are about. I do find it interesting, though, that if he were to move for 26, it's potentially more related to doubts about the engine rather than wanting to get out because he doesn't have any faith in the Red Bull design team without Adrian Newey as part of it. Max obviously spoke over the Miami weekend, and I think we would say towed the Red Bull party line of talking up all the other people that are at the team and maybe playing down slightly Newey's role in everything. People close to Verstappen or close to his camp have been saying for a while that is how he really thinks, that, you know, he is a firm believer in the people that are there. He is a big supporter of Pierre Vacher and those sort of people. So I don't necessarily see him thinking that Adrian Newey leaving results in a load of alarm bells ringing for him, as you guys have both kind of hinted at how maybe some other people who might have some influence on his decisions feel about that. It's a different question because it's wrapped up in other stuff going on at Red Bull.
Yeah, like everything, there's multiple threads going on in this particular issue, but certainly there's no reason for Verstappen not to have faith in Red Bull, at least in the medium term. And we really don't know where he stands on 26, because inevitably we zero in on the engine program, because that's the imponderable. It's impossible to know. And, you know, we've all spoken to people involved with various engine programs, and all they can do is say how they're getting on against their own expectations and targets. Whether those targets and objectives are correct, you just don't know. So it is very, very difficult to tell. All you can say is if they're ahead or behind of their kind of flight plan, as it were, for the progress they need to make. And there may be reason to be concerned there on the Red Bull project. There may not be. They've, as we've talked about, recruited loads of people from Mercedes. So everything's right for that power unit's organization at Red Bull to work very, very well. It's just there's been no test of it. That won't happen until 2026. But there's some other driver market things going on, Glenn. And the other big one in Miami was the possibility of Kimi Antonelli getting special dispensation for an early debut for Williams. Of course, you have to be 18 to have a super license to race in F1. In fact, you have to be 18 to have the free practice-only super license as well. He's not 18 until the August break. Villa Nicari asks, how high are the chances that Antonelli will replace Logan Sargeant this season, even for Imola?
Two different questions there, really. I get the impression that for Imola, no. I know that's been a rumour that's going around, but I don't see, from what you guys have been digging up in the paddock, including Scott Mitchell-Marm, who's not on this episode, the indication. The FIA made a comment, didn't they, saying that there'd been an application for dispensation or something. And the indications we've got is that didn't come from Mercedes, or if it did, it was a kind of informal asking of the question. And Mercedes are happy to wait until he's 18 before exploring any opportunities. So maybe Williams asked the question if they can get him in earlier, but as far as I'm aware, none of that's been resolved, so I can't see how that happens in time for Imola. At some point this season, you can see the logic for it, mainly based on Sargeant's lack of progress and just the fact that it really feels like he just keeps hitting a ceiling that isn't high enough. And it's so competitive down the back of the grid now that Williams, I think, are realizing that unless you have two drivers who can regularly try and snipe for these points in the way that Alex Albon can, and he's finding that more difficult this year, you're massively on the back foot against those other teams down the back. Then there's all kinds of extra layers here. You know, would Antonelli is obviously massively in the frame for Lewis Hamilton's seat at Mercedes for next year. If you're Williams, are you happy to help accelerate his development for Mercedes for half a season, for example, to then be back in a situation you're effectively in now where you've got to find someone else for next year to replace Sargeant anyway? Do they feel that they'd get enough benefit out of that? I know James Vowles has said that he's not keeping up with every detail of how Antonelli's getting on in the old car tests with Mercedes. I guess if we get to the point where this becomes a real possibility, he'll be shown as much data as he wants by his former team so he can make an informed decision. But would Williams be saying, well, you know, are we really just doing Mercedes a favour here? Because Williams might be looking at, okay, we want an upgrade for Sargeant, but what they might actually just get is the very, very rough diamond phase of Antonelli, where he suddenly cracks it and becomes a bit more rounded for Abu Dhabi, by which point it's too late to have done Williams any favours. So if you're James Vowles, you would certainly be saying, okay, we're interested here, but we want him for longer in the way, you know, similar to the George Russell deal. That might not work timeline-wise for Mercedes. So I think it's really complicated, but I can certainly see a scenario where once he's 18, if there's a desire from both sides and they can agree to it, then I think Sargeant isn't making a strong enough case at the moment to... He couldn't feel that hard done by if he lost the seat mid-season.
Yeah, and certainly if you're Williams and you can't get Antonelli for a full season in 2025, after doing that, you could certainly be asking Mercedes to make it worth your while to give him a preparatory half season. I imagine that will be in mind. Mark, a related question from Matthew McMahon. He says, do you think Sargeant has done enough to save his seat this weekend, or could the rumours of his imminent replacement be coming closer to reality? We've addressed part of that question, but Sargeant's performance, Miami was one of his best Grand Prix weekends, probably, which in itself probably says something, doesn't it?
Yeah, he hasn't done enough. He's not done enough to move on from that sort of a bit shaky debut season. You could argue at the end, of the, you know, when they were considering whether to keep him at the end of last season or replace him, there was enough to go on to suggest some promise, but it hasn't kicked on, and it showed no signs of doing so, really. So no, I don't think he has done enough, but he may well be in there for the foreseeable future, regardless, just because of the practicalities of replacing, as we've just been discussing.
I do have I had some sympathy for him, because I felt that Williams were kind of forced into taking him maybe a bit sooner than they would have liked, and you know, his development perhaps hadn't reached a point where he was definitely ready to make the step up, but nobody is in total control of their own destiny in those situations. And when you get that opportunity, you've got to do something with it. You can't just keep pointing back to the fact of, ideally I could have done with an extra year of F2. And that's what certainly what the great drivers do, but it's what a lot of the really good drivers do as well. And he's had enough time now that there should be a much clearer sign of progress, and it just doesn't appear to be there.
Yeah, exactly. This is ultimately elite sport, isn't it? And he's got
waits for no one.
He's got the best opportunity you could possibly have. He's an incumbent in the car, so he's got the chance to show how good he is week in, week out. And there have been, like we said so many times, there have been positive spikes, but he's just not joining the dots of those performance even well enough to string together a complete weekend. There have been very, very, very few of those during his F1 career. It's harsh on him, perhaps, but it's a harsh environment. And yeah, I don't think anyone could, you can feel sorry for him if he loses his drive, but I don't think you can say it's grossly unfair. But it sounds like he's got a very good chance of at least being in there to the August break. So he's still the incumbent. He's still got a chance. If you nail the next run of races, start performing really well, then you're not going to get dropped. That's always how it works. Well, thanks to Glenn and Mark for your insight. Remember, there's loads to read on therace.com. Huge amounts to listen to through our various podcasts, including the Race F1 Tech Show with Gary Anderson. We talk about Adrian Newey on this week's episode. And there's plenty to watch on our YouTube channel. And doubtless, there's loads more to happen off track before the return to Imola next weekend. So stay with us for everything you need to know from the world of Formula One.
The Athletic.